Nothing in this program should be considered investment advice. It is for educational purposes only. Please hit pause and read this disclaimer in full.
The old alliances are breaking down. We've got tension in a number of spots all over the globe. We've got financial issues. We've got basically just a fiat currency crisis that is really unfolding before our eyes.
The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this very special episode of Finance U. I'm your host, Chris Martinson, and today we're going to be talking gold, silver, and the prospect that what we're seeing is actually a signal that there's some kind of fiscal monetary accident coming. And of course, Japan has always been my dark horse candidate for a black swan event. With us today is David Russell, CEO of Goldcorp. David, so good to see you again.
Likewise, Chris. We're here at an interesting time, to say the least.
We certainly are. So I want to talk about this, but as set up for that, let me take myself out of this. This is just... you know, what we've been seeing for gold starting way back here, and it came up and it had that nice little rise into 2011, then it went right back down and it did nothing, and it sort of pursed along and people lost interest, and then it went up and then it went down, it's bouncing around the 2000 level, and then, oh my goodness.
It's taken off.
It's more than taken off. What do you think this is signaling right here?
I think we really are on the cusp, and we've talked about this a lot on and off in our conversations over the years. We are on the cusp of some sort of a monetary reset. This is, you know, the canary in the gold mine, you know, to pick just one analogy. That's what gold is at the moment, and to a degree, so is silver, and so is platinum, and so is palladium. There is a flight to hard assets. You know, that is undeniable at this stage. And it's out of fiat currency. Trust in fiat currency has hit near enough hit rock bottom at this stage. These are fairly unprecedented times. You've got to go back a long, long way before you see this level of geopolitical disquiet, is, I suppose, a polite way to put it. We're in, you know, this is nearly in uncharted territories at this moment in time. We've got a situation where old allies are now having conversations that we thought that they never would have. The old alliances are breaking down. We've got tension in a number of spots all over the globe. We've got financial issues. We've got basically just a fiat currency crisis that is really unfolding before our eyes.
Well, David, that was also a math problem that was easily predicted, I think, because, you know, I and you and others were talking about this years ago, which is that the fiat system got untethered from gold in 1971, and then it operated under this fiction that it could continuously expand exponentially forever, and it can't, right? The money system, I believe in Milton Friedman, should maintain some sort of a balance. It's a lubricant. It's a medium of exchange. It supports the economy, but it became its own thing. And so things got over-financialized, and it became more about the money than the underlying thing itself. And my poster child for that has to be, of course, silver, held underwater all these years. And then when they finally lost their grasp on that slippery beach ball held underwater, here we are. And this is just one of many commodities, I can tell you, that has been fictitiously mispriced by... all this financial shenanigans that happened back here. That's my view, but clearly we're in an explosive sudden repricing event, aren't we?
Well, the fictitiously repriced is a fantastic description of that. And the analogy of the beach ball underwater as well is great. Now, the thing is that people always regret the "this time it's different" comment. I believe that this time it is different. And the reason that I believe this time it is different is because those things that kept the metal suppressed for so long are no longer as powerful as they were. And as a result, silver is repricing. and gold is repricing. These things aren't happening in a vacuum, though, at the same time. This isn't just about the removal of the pressure that's keeping the basketball underneath the water. There's actually a force underneath that water as well, pushing it up. From a silver point of view, it's now deemed to be a strategic metal by so many different countries and economies. It is central to effectively what we are doing with the world, the direction in which it is going. The electrification, solar panels, electric vehicles, solid state batteries, AI, data centers, all of these things have massive reliance on silver. And these are things that weren't there back in the early parts of that chart. So we're at a crossroads here. There's a number of things that are colliding at this point in time, which is this whole new revolution and application of silver at the same time that we're having a fiat currency crisis. So once you do these things, you're going to have a multiplier effect in terms of the upward pressure on these things. And that's what we're seeing at this moment in time, particularly in silver.
Yeah, very well said. I actually think that part of the dynamic here is that the West, in particular the U.S. is the center of that, fell victim to this idea that markets solved all, right? Mm. But in fact, it takes 20 years to open a copper mine, and now people are openly saying, oh, we have this massive shortage of copper foreseeable over the next 10, 20 years, and we don't know how to solve that. And of course, you could see that coming 10 years ago, but we held to the fiction that if the markets set the prices, that's the right price for these things. And if you need more of it, you just make more money and you get more. There's this reality coming in that there's only so much copper, there's only so much silver, and I bet you soon only so much oil. People will figure that all out, and then there'll be this dramatic repricing. But it's hard to distinguish that dynamic from people fleeing mismanaged fiat currencies, because it would almost look the same. But now I think you're right. There's two drivers in there: loss of faith, plus the reality setting in that we might have made some pricing errors over the last couple decades.
Yeah, and MNT, what's that stand for again? The magic money tree. You know, that's the basis upon which we've been operating over the last couple of decades. Mm-hmm. It was great while it worked, and it was great while it wasn't massively overused and massively manipulated. But the reality is, the reason that we came off the gold standard was because it was keeping us disciplined in terms of managing our finances, managing our economy, managing our monetary system. And it has that inherent discipline in it. But that inherent discipline becomes a disadvantage when you want to go and fund wars, whether it's the Vietnam War or whatever it is. It becomes that disadvantage. So removing that, okay, you get access to all of these advantages and you can increase your monetary supply and whatever. And for the first while, people don't notice, don't understand the implications. So you do a little bit more and then they start to get used to it. And this is just the natural way things are. You have that inflation because we keep on pumping money into the system and people get used to that. And they don't see it. It's like that kind of throw a frog into boiling water and you'll jump straight out. Stick him in cold water, turn it up slowly, and you'll stay there till his skin falls off. Now, the reality is that's what's happened to us in modern monetary theory over the years. We got to that point where basically, metaphorically, our skin is falling off. We don't realize that the seeds of this was planted back in the 70s. That's the challenge, and that's what's now being undone at this stage. It was overused. It was abused. And we didn't end up with the markets are efficient when they're allowed to, when they're not influenced and manipulated by exterior forces. They are efficient. And if we had true efficient markets in precious metals, the metals would have been a lot higher than they have been over the years. Now, what we're moving towards now is slightly better price discovery in precious metals in particular. We've got the forces of supply and demand, and those that were the kind of maintaining the status quo or suppressing the price, they've lost a lot of the ability to do that. So now we're getting that basketball situation. We're getting back to a much better kind of price discovery. Now, nothing goes in a straight line, straight up. All, you know, there will be in very strong bull markets, particularly in commodities, things will have some dramatic pullbacks at some stage. But underlying this, I do feel that this time it is different because we've removed an aspect of the market that has been there for a long time.
Ooh, this time is different. four very powerful words in the field of finance, but I agree with you. And I think that there's a giant tinder pile of gasoline-soaked excesses that are just in search of a spark. David, we're going to hear from my favorite sponsor right now, and we're going to look into what people can do about this if they understand what's really happening. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that spark. Hey, folks, Chris Martinson here. Look, we've all been there watching our hard-earned dollars get chewed up by this endless inflation machine, while the folks in Washington and the big banks continue to play games with our money like it's Monopoly cash or something. It's not right. I know it, and you know it. The trust in the system? It's eroding faster than a sandcastle at high tide, especially with all the geopolitical storms brewing. And I've been saying it for years. You've got to protect yourself, your family, from all this nonsense. That's why I personally turn to gold and silver, the real deal, physical stuff that you can hold in your hands under your control, not some digital promise that could vanish overnight. Everyone should own some. It's just common sense in times like these. But here's the thing. When I need it stored securely, away from prying eyes, I use Goldcorp. They're the ones I trust. They ship it right to your door, really quick if you want to hold it in your hands, but also if you prefer, they can stash it in top-tier vaults in places like Switzerland or Singapore or right here in the United States. Your call, your metal. And for you, my friends who follow Peak Prosperity, they'll hook you up with the first 6 months of storage absolutely free. That's how much they value real people like us. Buying and selling? Hey, it's as easy as trading stocks, but way better. Because with Goldcorp, you're the sole owner. Fully allocated, fully segregated, in your name only. No sharing with strangers, no funny business, no security entitlement nonsense. Need cash fast? Sell in seconds at market price? Want it in your hands? Hey, one click and it's shipped. They've got everything from coins and bars to allowing for self-directed IRAs, all locked down and secure. It's simple, it's safe, and straightforward. Take charge of your future, folks. Don't wait for the system to fail you any further. Head over to peak.fan/goldcore. That's peak.fan/goldcore right now and claim that free storage. You won't regret it. I sure don't. All right, David, these are unprecedented times. It really feels like not this time is different, but it's not. This is called the failing of a fiat currency, and they failed hundreds, if not thousands of times for the same reasons. And people make mistakes. And so I've always had this dark horse candidate to be the spark that's going to get this whole thing going. I think it's Japan. And so just today, at the time of this recording, which is January 19th, we heard that Prime Minister Takaichi announced that she's going to dissolve parliament on January 23rd, 4 days, for a February 8th election, pledging to suspend the 8% food consumption tax, so dropping a tax, ramping up spending on jobs, households, and defense to 2% of GDP. And this spark, David, happened at a time when things were already a little dicey, you know, because this is many years going back from 2006. But you can see these long-dated bonds here, the 10, and they were all going up here. Remember the taper tantrum that was supposed to be this big moment? It's barely a blip on this chart, and this comes from Robin Brooks, love his stuff. But just today, I wake up and I find out, David, that the long-dated bonds down here, that's the 15s, 20s, 30s, 40s in Japan, are trading like penny stocks with their yields vaulting up 6 to 7 to nearly 8%. And this is what it looks like on the 10-year chart, so you can see it over time. This is extraordinary. This looks like it's different to me.
It is extraordinary, and it's the rate of change there that really is the problem. Underpinning this is something called the carry trade, effectively. And to put that in as simple terms as possible, it's borrowing cheap money in one currency and investing it in higher yielding assets in another currency. For years, that cheap currency was yen. And when I say cheap, it was really, really cheap. Interest rates are the cost of borrowing money. They were at zero for a long time. Mm-hmm. I remember back to my days trading on the desk. And effectively, that's what we used to do, was to borrow in yen, and we would invest in other currencies and make the differential as a return. That was known as the carry trade. And it was something that was done by practically every bank on the planet. That works when interest rates are low. But when you get that in, when interest rates go up, naturally it's not as attractive. But when interest rates go up that fast, that causes a liquidation event. So what has to happen is, in order to pay back, first of all, you're not going to be borrowing anymore. And this would have been a lot of funds that would have underpinned the growth in various different asset classes over the years. So you're not going to be borrowing anymore because now it's much, much more expensive. And it doesn't make any mathematical or logical sense to that. But also then, as that debt starts to reprice, it's repricing higher. So now what you've got to do is liquidate those assets that you had been investing in. And we are talking about massive, massive, massive funds and sums that is involved in this. So there will be a dramatic unwinding of a lot of this investment over the years. And that's going to have massive implications for the market. And when one of the things, we'll talk about investing in higher yielding assets, gold, silver, platinum, palladium, don't yield anything. So it wasn't like people were borrowing money in yen and investing it into a zero yielding asset. They were investing it into higher yielding assets. So gold and silver would have looked, in comparison, not as favorable, because you're losing out on all that opportunity cost between the higher yielding asset and a zero yielding asset. Now you're not. Now, when you're seeing the capital depreciation, this flight to quality, this flight into precious metals is now going to continue when the funds that are coming out of these carry trades are looking for a safe haven home, because these things are not happening in a vacuum.
Yeah, and very well said. And by the way, if this to me represents potentially all kinds of things, let me take myself out of the price of gold here on a monthly basis, but going up very, very steeply. And if this was in Japanese yen, it's going up so steeply, David, I'm worried it's going to bend time, go backwards.
Yeah, go backwards.
Right? But this suggests to me two things, right? So first, this is big money. This is not retail. U.S. retail is barely waking up at this point in time. Maybe the last few months, they're getting there. This is big money. And so when big money gets worried about, we're talking big language here, fiat currency accident, right? What we're really saying is there's two things you're going to worry about. One is counterparty risk at sort of the institutional level. Hey, if I had all my money in Lehman, bad counterparty, right? If I had all my money in Bear Stearns. So we don't know where the risks are. So there's institutional risk. But Japan is raising the prospect of sovereign risk. And that, I think, puts extra fuel on the fire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a challenge. This is something that is really becoming very difficult for them to manage. And if we do see some sort of sovereign debt crisis, which is brewing there at the moment, those things have contagion effect. It's never just limited to the country in which it happens. We could see that anything from there, whether it's the destruction of the long-term capital management when they're investing in, in Southeast Asia. We've seen the debt crisis in the UK not too long ago. All of these things have contagion effects, not just to other sovereigns, but also to other markets. So if it starts in the debt market, it moves into the other capital markets, that it moves into the equity markets. These, because everything ultimately is underpinned by this liquidity, which is the global bond market. Everything derives effectively the interest rates, the bond yields. Everything underpins the global debt market, which ultimately fuels all of our asset classes.
Well, and of course, the risk there, because nobody really knows. I've asked people who are deep into the business, like, what really is the collateral underpinning all of these derivatives, which are measured in quadrillions? And everybody's a little vague about that, And so my concern, like I think other people's concern would be, that when push comes to shove, we peel back the collateral veil and we find out that the collateral shares a lot in common with a Minneapolis Somali daycare center. Right? It might be there, it might not be there, but I'm, in the gold and silver market, are we not discovering that London maybe had some hypothecation or lending issues or liquidity issues, free float, whatever you want to talk? I know you know a lot more about this than I do, but just peeling into that one market, we found some dodgy things, I think, already, and I doubt we've pulled that rug up entirely. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think we've kind of scratched the surface of that. And the reality is that a lot of these things are so opaque and deliberately opaque to keep us out. So they are rife for speculation. And the reality is that one of those speculative thoughts will probably be fairly close to correct. It's an uncomfortable time for a lot of people that are involved in that market. What I'm talking about is the bullion banks market. It appears that there's a lot of people that are short and that are now scrambling for that physical metal. That was great when they were able to keep it suppressed for a long period of time, but now it's acts that the chickens are coming home to roost and they need to get their hands on physical metal. So we're seeing that squeeze, that appetite for getting their hands on the physical, and I fear it's only going to increase, and it wouldn't surprise me, but there'll be some victim of it in terms of one of the bullion banks. It's a case of which one of these blinks first in terms of squaring up their short physical position and what impact that has and the contagion effect in the market that might have on other bullion banks as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm really keenly interested now in your position on the front lines. You know, Goldcorp operating, selling gold and silver and vaulting and delivering gold and silver to people's hands. Obviously, you know, you have your finger right on the pulse. What, and you use the words, this time is different. You've been in this business for a while. How's this environment right now? What are you seeing in terms of flows, shortages, shortfalls, buying, selling? Who's doing what?
Yeah. First of all, just in terms of flows, I haven't seen it like this ever in my career. We're probably doing 10 times the volume that we were doing this time last year. It's huge. It's significant. And I don't just say that to be dramatic. What we're seeing is pockets of the market that would not have considered investing in precious metal, now investing in precious metal. Bring it down onto a personal level. There's been people that I've been talking about the benefits of owning precious metals for the last 15 or 20 years. And this year, they're coming up to me and going, do you think I should buy some precious metals? And I'm going, yeah, I think so. So I've been talking to these people 15, 20 years saying, listen, this is the reason that you hold it as part of your portfolio. It is that insurance against X, Y, and Z. And the reality is the closer you get to a situation like we're finding ourselves in at this moment in time, where that looks an awful lot more likely, the cost of that insurance is going up in terms of the cost of gold and the cost of silver is going up. We're seeing individual investors. Now, we operate in, we have... You know, we've clients in, you know, 40, 50 plus countries, but our three main markets, Ireland, UK and US. So in Europe, we're seeing unprecedented demand for physical gold and silver. We're seeing people who are looking for platinum and palladium, where we sold in 1 week towards the end of 2025 what we probably sold in platinum in the 5 years together prior to that. So there's massive appetite for tangible physical assets. We're seeing it in cohorts. So we're seeing a lot more buying out of Europe. We're still not seeing the appetite in the retail investor in the US that we're seeing elsewhere. It's surprising. And I think that is a tsunami of buying that is going to be unleashed soon. It's increasing, but nowhere near like what we've seen in Europe.
Well, that's odd, but it'll come along. You know, one of the things is anytime silver moves up, Bloomberg is there with an article about how people are cashing in grandma silver and taking trips or something. They having fun with it, you know, whatever. So we've been marketed against.
We are seeing people now because there's been, you know, those people that we've been talking to about buying precious metals for, you know, for a long period of time that actually did act. They're now taking advantage and taking some of it off the table effectively because we're knocking on the door of $100. So, you know, from a portfolio management point of view, that could be considered a prudent thing to do. It's small in comparison. We're not seeing anybody with grandma silver just yet.
Yeah, well, it's happened here in the U.S. So I just read a report, Eric Jung, King Kong 888 on Twitter, saying that a Hong Kong billionaire had announced that they'd moved 25% of their portfolio into gold. once you have that class of people moving in, obviously things can go very quick because they all hang out at the same parties, and they all, as soon as they realize this is an okay thing to do, that's where I think prices could move very quickly. I've also heard reports out of family offices out of Singapore. Somebody told me who's in tight with that whole operation said that they're fairly price insensitive, meaning they care about how many ounces they're getting their hands on. They're not waiting for a dip or a pullback. They're just like, well, now's the time. They're moving in. And of course, you can't move in all at once. You got to structure that carefully, and you have people who manage that so you don't move the price. Yeah. Are you seeing any of that? Are you seeing bigger accounts coming in?
Definitely, yes, we are. But just as you were saying that, there's a point that I wanted to make because I think it's really that is really relevant, and it speaks to that idea of the billionaire putting 25% in. The people that are buying now are not looking at this and saying, I think this will go 5 or 10% this year, and that'll be a nice little return for me, and my portfolio on average will, you know, be X, Y, or Z at the end of this year. People are buying this and they're putting large chunks into it. They are happy to just put that away and say, that's me protected. I've got a limited downside on that. This is my financial insurance. I've got XYZ amount of assets. I'm not looking at this every day, whether it goes up or down a couple of ticks, and revaluing what my portfolio is. My returns are on gold. They're buying this as a hedge against uncertainty. And if we had an uncertainty index, it's in the red at this moment in time. And it looks like it's only going one direction. So there's a different... The people that are buying now are not trading this. That whole trading mentality that we've had over the last couple of decades is not the underpinning this move higher. This is a... I want to be in something physical and tangible. And what that is, you know, they want the proximity to their wealth, and ultimately gold and silver, and to a lesser degree, platinum, palladium, but gold and silver are the ultimate wealth. They're your way of physically handling it, touching it, having it there in your hand. It's the shortest proximity that you will actually have to your wealth. The alternates, effectively stocks and bonds, they're long-distance relationships that you actually have with those cash flows. Gold and silver in your hand, that's ultimate wealth. You know, so whether that's in your hand, whether that's stored on your behalf where you can access it, but that's it. That's ultimate wealth. And what people want is they want to reduce down that proximity to it. And they are not looking at this through the lens of whether it's up a tick or down a tick or up a book or down a book tomorrow. That's not what this is about. This is about the ultimate hedge and saying, am I protected?
I agree. And hearkening back to that idea of counterparty risk, J.P. Morgan, I think it was 1912-ish, said, you know, only gold is money, all else is credit. And so we know now that gold is considered a tier one asset under Basel III, which means banks can hold it on their balance sheet at the same tier as cash, treasuries, stuff. David, I want to propose that there's a tier they missed, and I call it gold as my tier zero asset. It's nobody else's counterparty, provided you adhere to the golden rule, which is possession is 10/10 of the law.
Yeah, tier zero. I think they would have if they could have. What I mean by that is that just basically demotes every other asset to, you know, to the halfpenny place. It makes it inferior. It basically says, you know, treasuries no longer are viable in the same way that they used to be when you compare them with precious metals. I think that what they might have inadvertently triggered by making a statement like that, or to further differentiate gold, would have been unpalatable. So I think they did it as much to protect themselves as anything else. They're being cautious. They know what's going on, and they just don't want to collapse the system. And the reality is, they make gold a tier one asset. They didn't just sit there one day and decide, oh, this might be a nice thing to do. They understand the direction in which this monster, this machine, has been going over the last couple of decades, and how unsustainable that it is. And if they didn't allow gold to become a tier one asset, that then we would have had serious problems a lot sooner, and probably more sustained and longer term. So I think this is part of a larger plan, effectively.
Well, exciting times. And David, I thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day in the middle of the day. I know you've got a lot to do, but really appreciate your insights and experience here. And for everybody else, please check out Gold Core if you have any interest, and you should, in having gold and silver delivered to your house or securely stored. And more about that down below in the link. So, David, thanks so much for your time today.
My pleasure, Chris.